Are you an insider? Subscribe to FC Insiders today to receive full unedited interviews, news, rumors, exclusive content, and more. Join FC Insiders at futurecommerce.fm.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Their software enables truly personalized one-to-one interactions between marketers and customers across all channels. They help you build loyalty and enrich the customer journey while increasing your revenue. Go to emarsys.com/futurecommerce to request a demo and see for yourself how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions. That's Emarsys, emarsys.com/futurecommerce. Hello and welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
And I'm Brian.
And Brian, you have some news.
Yeah, big news. I left Amazon. Which is big news for this podcast because I can say Amazon now.
Amazon. You can actually say the A word.
What I should do is I feel like pulling a Steve Ballmer right now and like yelling Amazon for like 2 minutes.
Very, very happy to have you back on Team Future Commerce, Team FC. Not that we ever lost you.
We have like three months worth of Amazon content to talk about now. And like,
are you guys ready for the next 45 minutes? We'll just talk about
it. We're back to being
It'll
an
be
Amazon
like old times.
Podcast.
Yeah. It'll be like old times. Well, I'm sure at some point one day you'll share part of your journey and what all your time at Amazon meant to you.
Yeah.
But welcome. Glad to have you back.
Thanks. It's exciting.
Yeah. And we're coming into summer now. This is our 2 year episode or 2 year, well, right around our 2 year anniversary, right?
Almost. We're getting there.
Pretty cool. We launched
at the end of August 2 years ago. So
yeah,
close, getting close.
It's huge. And we're gearing up into the summer months, bringing you a lot of new content, and it's got a jam packed show for you here today. So let's kind of jump right into it. What you want to start off with, some Amazon news just for,
yeah,
time,
I mean, let's just start talking about Amazon. Why not?
Why not?
there's nothing holding me back from that.
And in the past week, probably the biggest story to come out around Amazon is that they're getting into pharmacy. They have reached an agreement to acquire online pharmacy PillPack, and that's huge.
Huge,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just another part of the story. After Whole Foods, like, it makes sense. I think it's a really smart move.
Yeah, and I don't think it's sort of like the anti Whole Foods. Whole Foods is like supplements and wellness by through food and nutrition and diet. And this is the other end of the business, which is if none of that garbage actually works for you, here's some pills you can take. And that's PillPack is interesting because here in the United States, they're already pretty huge. They're doing business in 49 states, not including Hawaii. And there were a couple large retailers, including Walmart, who, you know, comes up over and over in these type of conversations, who were, you know, trying to take over the 5-year-old startup. And PillPack's one of like probably a half a dozen that I can think of off the top of my head that are in the space, including Optum, which I think is already owned by a large healthcare provider in the United States, and some others who are sort of forging new ground in this area. And Amazon gives some, you know, huge legitimacy to this space, and, you know, probably is the first in a row of dominoes to
M&A activity. You have to wonder if it's going to play into like what they're doing with Berkshire Hathaway and JP Morgan Chase around.
Yeah. Yeah.
We
talk about that. So if you didn't catch that episode, what was that story?
I mean, we don't know too much about it. There's an initiative between JP Morgan, Amazon, and Berkshire Hathaway to sort of reinvent health. They haven't given us too many details on it yet. But I have a feeling this will probably play into it. when I say reinvent health, I mean invent health insurance and care. And so I would imagine that there, you know, whatever they come out with, which will probably be rolled out to Amazon employees, would be my guess, or be an option for them. They'll have the ability to get their prescription drugs via, Amazon same day shipping, Amazon 2 hour shipping, Amazon 1 hour shipping, and just completely eliminate that need for the 24 hour pharmacy.
Oh, for sure. Oh, big time. Yeah. Oh, Amazon Prime. I mean, a lot of pharmacies in the United States anyway. And again, we speak from our perspective, even though we have a very large international audience that listens to Future Commerce. But, you know, here in the United States, there's a lot of pharmacies that already do in-home delivery, or to direct to your house delivery. That's a budding market itself. So that's very, 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 very interesting stuff. I have to wonder, it reminds me of my favorite tweet so far of 2018, which is, somebody, I'm trying to find the Twitter source. If you find it, let us know in the show notes, or in the comments, over on futurecommerce.fm. But, my favorite tweet of 2018 so far is, I just bought a toilet seat on amazon.com and now Amazon thinks I have an insatiable desire for more and more toilet seats and continues to recommend me toilet seats at every turn. And I have to wonder if that's where we're heading with, with pills. Amazon, it was like, I took antibiotics for this, this cough that I've had, and now, Amazon's shoving more and more antibiotics in my face. Yeah, Amazon will be the reason that we have super viruses and super bugs. And yeah, that's, which actually, you know, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have a feeling that they'll probably start to put some limitations around that. Like, oh yeah, toilet seats. That's kind of a one-time purchase. or at least like once every, couple of years purchase, or however often you change your toilet seat, I won't judge. I think, yeah.
Yeah, that's a, drugs, maybe they can
drugs
bring
might
maybe
have
can
a few more walls around them than toilet seats do.
Here's what's really, really interesting. And there's a lot of startups in this space. And so there's one locally here, that's gotten a lot of press, here in West Palm Beach. I don't need to give them a whole lot of advertising. I think they're called, what's the name of that company? Mail My Prescriptions, I think is who it is. Oh. They're big in the startup space. They're like tech startup here in South Florida. But what's interesting, about them and a lot of others is they're more in the wholesale model. So instead of you having to have direct relationships where you're, you have an insurance carrier who's, basically providing you a standard copay through your insurance program.
You buy your antibiotics in bulk.
It's not antibiotics. It's usually like maintenance, medication like statins or like beta blockers or some like things for like cholesterol or, heart disease or, things that you would probably be on for quite a long time. And those are some of the largest drugs here in the United States. And because they're so prevalent and there's so much of them and so many people take them, you can buy them
in bulk.
At wholesale in bulk for very, very cheap. but the way that these companies do it is you're basically buying options. So I buy it and lock in my price at like 12 cents a pill. And I buy them in, massive quantities. And then, they, as an online pharmacy, ration them out to me over a period of time.
Oh, interesting.
It's a really interesting model. And I don't take any prescription medication myself right now. So I don't have direct knowledge of how PillPack works, but it's interesting. And there's been a few sort of tech talks around this space. I think there's some interesting problems to solve. And it also, in my mind, changes the way that education and employment happen for people in the drug industry,
yes.
Right? Because when you think about when people go to school for pharmacy, a lot of what they learn in pharmacy, if it's not compounding or actually like making and packaging pharmaceuticals, like a lot of that's being done by machines today. So, is, are we reducing the barrier to entry to be, you know, a pharmacology student is now a glorified telephone operator in 2020 and beyond. Mm-hmm. So these are all interesting questions, right?
Here's another interesting thing. I stopped by Walgreens to pick up some medication. I don't remember why. And I noticed that there was a sign in the window of the pickup, and the sign said, "Oh, you can pick up these additional items when you drive through here." And it had a list of additional like kind of over the counter medicine, I think, and maybe some other small items, usually related to like baby care. I think it was like mm-hmm. infant Advil or something like that, and a few other like family focused items. I wonder, you know, if you know, some of these pharmacies will sort of find ways to innovate and kind of push back against, you know, like find ways to use those windows for grocery pickup or other kinds of pickup as they have to compete with PillPack and others like them. I would love that.
It starts with like the upsell of the Benadryl and the and the Tylenol, and it moves on to, you know, longer tail items. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally. And that, you know, there are all of these smaller, you know, Walgreens, Rite Aid, and others are set up so perfectly to do this. Like, do grocery pickup. Yeah. They're smaller facilities.
Yeah, they have the infrastructure. They have
drive around them usually. That would be very interesting. It would be interesting to see. Like, I know that Albertsons bought out Rite Aid. I wonder if they have any plans in that realm to do some, use them sort of as their pickup centers or distribution of some sort.
And Albertsons, you know, already owns Safeway and like that. That is they're a very large grocery chain. I mean, they could be interesting. Watch this space. Yeah. It's interesting. There was a figure that was being juggled around. It's funny because I don't have it off the top of my head, which is pretty on brand for me on all of my podcasts. I don't have it on hand, but maybe somebody else can help us source it. But something like we're at like a record 9% of empty retail space in the United States, something to that effect. Like it's
Toys.
The very last Toys R Us closed up this last week or something, and all these fun memes that were floating around on Twitter and Facebook. What I found was really interesting is some of the applications, and I think we had talked about this some time ago, of unused retail space that's going out to very interesting applications, like a resurgence of like indoor bounce house play places in suburban America, as you know, and also like charter schools take over retail space here in South Florida. It's a very big thing. We also are seeing a lot of houses of worship that are taking over old retail space. So I wonder if, you know, as we sort of, you know, the more that even the way people get their like tying it back to what we're even talking about here, the more that people will begin to move their prescriptions to online delivery or in-home delivery, and we don't need the retail space and infrastructure in that way and in the way that we needed it before, where we were sort of marrying convenience and grocery with pharmacy. I wonder if we're going to begin to see a shuttering of those types of spaces too. And if locally here, like when you mentioned Rite Aid bought out Eckerd Company here in Florida some time ago, 10, 15 years ago, maybe. And they shuttered most of those stores here in Florida. And a lot of those, you know, old retail spaces now are like community banks, and you know, one became a Wendy's, and I'm just trying to think about, you know, the retail footprint, the retail real estate thing that's happening right now. Retail's growing, real estate is emptying out, and that displacement creates other opportunity for other types of you know, things that actually need real estate.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point.
Our day and age.
It's interesting. The mall vacancy rate is at a 6-year high right now. And I mean, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but who actually goes to the mall anymore? Yeah. There's no...
I go to the mall.
Last time I went to the mall is because I was waiting for a movie and there was nothing else to do. It was... I think, you know, malls and retail space and, you know, all of it, it's still changing and it's going to get more dramatic, I think, even more dramatic coming up here. Which, speaking of Amazon, I think it's going to present a lot of opportunities for retailers who don't have a physical space that are, they could really come and get everything at a discount. You know, we saw like textiles, they own, like Shoe Dazzle and, they partnered with Kate Hudson on her brand. The name's escaping me. This Fabletics. I know that they're expanding their retail footprint, and we've talked about this a lot. But I think that you know all this is doing is allowing you know digitally native brands to come in and swoop up these places at a discount. Make way for brands that are actually you know making way or making. Make or gaining ground in consumers' minds and pocketbooks online, instead of using retail space to sort of grow your footprint, they're using it to as more of a customer service center, like a place to they're putting in stores where they have strength instead of trying to expand their reach. So I think just a different use of space for retail. And like you said,
that's true.
Like other types of companies are coming in as well. Like you said, the bounce houses, the trampoline places that, you know, that's funny.
Which is, you know, a fad. Like I don't know that those things are here to stay.
Well, actually, that's nothing.
It's experiential or amusement.
Temporary type businesses come in these places and you know, come in and come out.
Seasonal. Yeah.
Pop up.
More Halloween and Christmas stores. The mall near me, to your point, and a lot of strip malls around here are like 90% Sprint and T-Mobile stores now, and like you know, AT&T and Verizon, and it's like cell phone stores,
which are basically service centers as well. I mean, in many ways.
Yeah, that's exactly what they are. Like one that shocked me, and also kind of ties back into the healthcare discussion, is how many in-person service centers that we have for like Blue Cross Blue Shield and other insurance providers here in my locale. So they move into old retail space, and in some cases they're even building, you know, brand new real estate. They're building, you know, the one actually renovated a Carrabba's, which I thought was really interesting. Like it's like, when was the last time I ate a Carrabba's? Probably the last time that I used my health insurance in a very large, meaningful way. I don't know how we tie that into Juggalos, but we might as well. That's the segue into...
That's your worst segue
if
ever.
You're juggling... I know. If you're juggling healthcare, speaking of juggling... No. Since we were talking about Amazon,
I'm going to interrupt one of your segues.
Again. You do this to me every time.
last note, you mentioned community banks and such. I think banks are kind of struggling with what to do with their retail spaces as well, because they have these really large retail spaces that they don't necessarily need all that space. And it was interesting. A few weeks back, I went to a Capital One cafe.
Yes. Please talk about this, because you sent me random pictures and I was like, what in the world am I looking at?
Right. I went in there. I was in the same boat, but it's basically a Capital One coffee shop. It's totally branded Capital One. They use Pete's Coffee. And it's a bank. And like, it was quite an interesting space. Very like
it's a bank, but it's a coffee shop.
Open space. They're like, yeah, come in, work here. We want you to, you know, be, you know, use this space to, and of course, you know, they're like, oh, and no pressure. We're, you know, we're not paid on commission. We're here, you know, we're just here if you need us. But it's interesting. I think banks are having to find other ways of using their spaces and, you know, maybe get into the coffee game too, make a little money on coffee because they, not really. But, you know, the idea is I think they're trying to use their spaces more creatively. Because with ATMs being as powerful as they are, you know, and you know, the cost of rent in Seattle is being as high as it is, I think they're looking for interesting ways of using their spaces to attract people and like not just waste a giant like retail store or you know, like probably very high rent space in Seattle just for their bank. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Oh, crying out loud. This is insane to me. Like it sort of, maybe it's a hallmark of where the global economy is at the moment. More and more financial and banking products need, you know, are being created and more and more consumers are seeking them at the moment. And it's noisy out there. In fact, you have a lot of, you know, you have once upon a time, maybe 15, 20 years ago, if you walked into a bank, let's say you had some money or you had some investment income or some income that you wanted to find an investment product to put it into, you might trust your local bank to be able to give you good advice around that. Now people are sinking it into Bitcoin. There's an app, you know, there's an app every day of the week that you could use to make free stock trades. You know, banks have to get creative to attract customers and their financial products outside of, you know, personal checking. Which is now commoditized and basically free. You know, in the last 20 years, that's just how banking is. So you have to sell other products. And if you have to attract people with the drug of the day, which happens to be coffee, that maybe that's one way to do it. Free internet, coffee, and a bank, and maybe you open up a checking and savings in a home equity line of credit.
They call that the coffee package?
The coffee package. It's the red eye. We call it the red eye. That's... unbelievable.
Yes. All right. Sorry to interrupt your terrible segue. But
the red eye or the black eye. Speaking of black eyes,
back, you know, to the
Juggalos. Yeah. Okay. So, so on the Amazon tear, I love that we can talk about Amazon now. This is fantastic. there's a lot of stories in the last week and a half or two that, you know, and some of them sort of like bringing back or updates to stories that we had brought to you a few months ago. But a lot of stories around facial recognition, one of which it just popped up for me. It was reposted over on futurism.com, but original article that I found was over on theoutline.com. And it's a story about how Juggalo makeup defeats facial recognition is effective at defeating facial recognition. And this comes from sort of like a joke post on Twitter, but is actually quite true in that it misidentifies people based on the characteristics, the sort of like feature lines that are used in facial recognition to identify people, which usually, by the way, if you're familiar with the technology that's used for the face unlock or Face ID on Apple's iPhone X or 10 or whatever it's called. I can't believe that 30 years later, we're still doing the X or 10 thing with Apple OS X, OS 10. I don't know what to call it, but that's what it is. And, you know, it's pretty good at recognizing you, whether you have a hat on or whether you have glasses on or whether you have makeup on. But for whatever reason, the Juggalo makeup, which if you're not familiar, is sort of like clown-esque Harlequin type makeup for as worn by the fans and the performers of the band Insane Clown Posse, which in and of itself, I never thought we would ever mention on the show. So facial recognition technology is being defeated pretty easily by Juggalo makeup, which I think is, you know, it's funny. But it's interesting because it brought up, when we were talking in the pre-show, it brought up a lot of other topics around how facial recognition is being used and sort of broadly adopted. And one of the main technologies that are being sort of adopted nowadays is the AWS service or Amazon Cloud Services, Amazon Recognition, which can take video streams and parse videos for facial recognition data. and easily cross-reference it across in another existing database of attribution or relational data you might have on known faces. So, you know, law enforcement's using this now, government's using this in interesting ways, pilot programs across the country, and how Amazon is selling this product into police departments. Think, so anyway, no, interesting. I mean,
just FYI, like, is this actively being used? Washington County and yes. Oregon, they've been using recognition for a year. And I mean, I think they're really happy with it. You know, it's cut down identification suspects identification time on reported suspects from 2 to 3 days to minutes.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries. For every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll, Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes. From recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com and be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Powered by artificial intelligence, the Emarsys marketing platform enables truly personalized interactions between marketers and customers across all channels, building loyalty, enriching the customer journey, and increasing your revenue. Each day, Emarsys connects more than 2,200 brands with 3.2 billion customers all over the world. Emarsys delivers over 350 million personalized interactions across email, mobile, social, and web. To learn more about how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions and actions, visit emarsys.com/futurecommerce and request your demo today. That's Emarsys, emarsys.com/futurecommerce. I mean, you pair this with pervasive closed circuit television, or you know, or street camera type. You know, you basically have what was the Will Smith movie?
Enemy of the State.
Satellites. Enemy of the State. You basically have what they, you know.
No, this isn't actually.
You basically have
it,
that.
It is an interesting point because private companies can. You know, can absolutely use this at their will, right? I bet you that a lot of them probably already are, and we just don't know about it.
That's the main that would be the main consumer. Like when I say consumer product that Amazon puts out, that's the main business use case here is to be able to, you know, parse facial recognition data from, you know, incoming image and video streams,
which. You know, and let's go all enemy of the state for a second. You know, if that data is able to be accessed by law enforcement, you might as well not even worry that the government is using it because private security cameras are everywhere. So in short, like this isn't, this isn't really like it doesn't really matter if the government's using it. And it does. Don't get me wrong. I shouldn't say that.
There are other privacy concerns that are not government related.
Exactly. Like you're worried about, if you're worried about, you know, the government being able to access your iPhone, this, you know, don't worry. Yep. They don't need to not long from now.
Well, what do you think your Arlo camera or, you know, whatever other camera, you know, home security camera device you might have in your house, what do you think it's doing when it tells you a certain person is home? That presence information is something that's been concerning me for some time. I think over a year we've been talking about that here the show. Is like not just who you are, but where you are and you know, when you are.
Yeah.
And those things, I don't know that we've figured out how to monetize that specifically yet, but I'm waiting for the day when, you know, that information is super important to, you know, the pizza delivery company who wants to send me just in time ad at 6 p.m. when the kids are complaining about food,
Is this listening to them complain about food through your Amazon Echo device?
Yeah, precisely. All of that kind of stuff. I mean, that when you draw a line between all of the things that are happening both online and offline, or environmental, data gathering that's happening around us, it's quite striking. And that's not even government use. I do think it's kind of creepy, and from a government sense, this sense of Big Brother, being able to sort of know who we are and where we are whenever we are there. Let's come back. Why would Amazon create a product like this? Okay. So some of the recognition actually does have some sort of consumer tech uses. So let me give you a good example. Let's say that we had a video podcast. Let's say that we had some sort of a video stream, a live video stream. If I wanted to use Amazon's recognition, I could, basically it could understand that your face is different to my face on two incoming video streams and be able to automatically, switch lower thirds or be able to contextually, play with that video stream to add context to it. And we saw this at the Royal mm-hmm. Wedding. We talked about this already, right? So being able to understand Brian's face and be able to put a lower third automatically, dynamically generated that, is on Brian's camera stream that says that this is Brian Lang of Future Commerce, and, grab some interesting contextual information from that. So there are probably some use cases that, are useful and novel that aren't just creepy government. The fact that Amazon, was piloting this with law enforcement organizations, a little bit interesting.
Yeah, you think you'd hear about it with private companies,
recent story.
Not law enforcement.
For sure. Yeah, but the story that made the rounds, especially in the NPR, podcast stories that sort of went deep on this, is it's being applied to law enforcement, and at some point, somebody has some concern about how that automation.
The biggest issue, and you're referring to that NPR story, which is really interesting. But I think the biggest concern was that it happened without anyone's real consent. It just all of a sudden happened. All of a sudden, the government was using it, and no one really voted on it. No one really was aware that it was happening. The public had no real notification that it was going to happen. And that's right. Super concerning, at least in, I think it was Orlando or one of the cities.
Right. Right. And, in fact, some, public outcry has caused, some of those programs to end. So Orlando's police department did drop, Amazon pilot of their recognition service. Good article over on Gizmodo about that, if you want to check it out. I think what's interesting here is that there's a privacy concern that, I sort of have a through line to that's not Amazon based. That's sort of just data gathering and aggregation based that we have no control over, that GDPR also has no control over. Even those who are strictly adhering to GDPR, it doesn't, there's the spirit of the law, but the letter of the law doesn't apply to certain instances and use cases, which I think are sort of concerning for me. So I kind of wanted to go there, and I think a lot of it's sort of Facebook centric, but I wanted you to finish up any thoughts.
Yeah,
you might have.
Well, I just think there's a lot of opportunity for commerce here, for sure. Obviously, knowing who people are when they walk into your store is going to be super useful for personalization, for being able to best address their needs, mm-hmm. to connect them to their account, in store pickup, all kinds of uses for this. I totally see why Amazon's piloting this and you're ready to roll this out. I mean, we experienced the Go store and talked about that earlier last year, and I can see that getting even better. And I don't know, there's a lot of uses for this. Combine that with something like Noveto. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but Noveto Systems, mm-hmm. which is personalized sound beamed directly to your ear, which is...
Yeah, talk about this a little bit, because this was interesting, an interesting technology that I hadn't seen. You pointed this out to me earlier this week.
It's personalized sound. Basically, This technology can shoot sound like in a very directionalized manner directly to your ear. So it's like having headphones on, but you don't have anything on, which is really crazy. Like, so many like questions that I have about this. I caught this because I saw Brian Wallace, who is a former executive over at Magic Leap, is helming this company now. The uses for personalization within a store, I think, could be like absolutely phenomenal. Like, you could even have reps that aren't in the store talking to people who are in the store.
Oh, that's not crazy and dystopic at all. That doesn't worry me at all. That random, you know, headless voices are talking to me and only me as I walk around the world.
Yeah.
That's and not scary.
You know, this would be great for the car. This is great if you're watching. Like, you could, you know, you could have people sitting on a couch using two different devices without headphones and, you know, car, home, gym, so many places where this could be useful in store. If this technology is actually, if it's actually functional and actually works properly, like, the opportunity for disrupting commerce is insane. Like, I am just blown away by this idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So from a commerce impact, I definitely see that there are potential positive uses of all of these types of technologies. I don't know that I want a whole bunch of juggalos running around. So that sounds worse, actually. I'd rather have facial recognition than, you know, everyone in like Harlequin makeup walking around the streets trying to
maybe
defeat
that,
facial
like,
recognition.
Maybe this creates like anti-facial recognition beautification products where like people are like painting their faces different things like with in ways such that.
Yeah, maybe there's a fashion trend that sort of gets born out of this. But I think it also kind of maybe opens the door to, you know, I don't know. I see a world where, you know, potentially we decide that, you know, our national security is more important than people's, you know, freedom of expression and makeup. And maybe one day we decide that we don't want, you know, people to be able to wear juggalo makeup. Ooh. Maybe one day we decide that people aren't allowed to wear makeup at all.
Hard right maybe, now. Like, this is about as far future as I think
you've gone. you know that I take things to the very end of the extent of possibility. I think it's the thing that makes me concerned is that while there are positive aspects here, There are certainly also negative aspects, and we touch on that stuff with AI all the time. I think in this particular case, AI powers this, and there's definitely a through line. I'm more concerned, getting back to what I was hinting at before, I'm more concerned that people who aren't necessarily being tracked in this way, who are being tracked in this way without their consent, who have no awareness that it's happening. That once you sort of do apply your consent, that it's retroactive in perpetuity. And any data that we've been gathering on you, for instance, this story that came out recently about the updates to Facebook's GDPR privacy and sort of what people are, privacy policy updates and how people are surmising how Facebook has been operating for a better part of a decade is, whether you have a Facebook account or not, there is a Facebook profile on you. In much the same way that we assume that there is a CIA or an FBI file in the United States on every human being, that there's a story about you somewhere, Facebook literally does have that. And they know everywhere you've been on the internet because everyone's using Facebook pixel tracking nowadays because of advertising. And they know everywhere that you've been online, even in, you know, potentially even in incognito mode. And now, because of Facebook Live and Instagram, they know everything that you look at when you're in the Facebook or in the Instagram discovery tab. They know when you click through onto certain hashtags in Instagram. They're building a profile on you. And the day that you decide that you want an Instagram or a Facebook account, you are consenting that every piece of data that they have ever gathered on you, no matter who you are or how long they've been tracking you, will be associated to you. And now any information that you surrender in that process, including your birthday, your gender, you know, the pictures you freely and willingly upload yourself, will be used to associate that data back to you and further fill in that profile. And that's useful to advertisers. It might even be useful to you if you're like me. I've found plenty of products that I'm very happy with because of my, you know, Facebook account. And, you know, I've had many friendships that have been revived. And like, there's a lot of positives to the world. But I think that there's a lot of negatives in that I don't like the idea that someone's tracking me for 10 years without my knowledge and associating all that data that they know about me back to one event when I decided I wanted to use their service. And I feel like that's where we're heading with public surveillance and facial recognition, in that one day, if I decide that I do want to opt in, that I've opted in retroactively for the rest of my life. And you will know everything about me forever. I think this has broad impacts.
Especially with facial recognition. You know, like, I think liberally. That's a really... Yeah,
especially
I think
with that, facial recognition.
Like, above right? all... Well, maybe not above all else, but like that... That's such a powerful like tool, like and this can happen without your consent. That's an interesting point, because there's going to have to be consent around this. Like, you're going to have to consent to go into a store and, you know, and in like, hey, you know, your face is being tricked. It's not just camera for security use now. It's camera for like, we know who you are when you walk in.
But it's GDPR. GDPR in the real world will not work, because just putting a notice, you know, outside the mall, nope. Which Brian never goes to, but putting a notice outside of the mall or outside of Macy's that says you're consenting to facial recognition when you walk in here, actually doesn't do the trick, because what that has done in GDPR, that's not allowed. The spirit of GDPR is I should, as a consumer, be able to opt out of you tracking me and still be able to use your service.
Yes.
That's how it's supposed to work.
That is the part right now that I think it's going to get really messy. Like, there's not going to be, that option is not going to be available.
Yeah. And that's if you look at it, some retail outlets now, they've decided they'd rather just not do business in Europe than have to comply with that.
Well, they're
going
to have to,
you know,
because
admittedly kind of onerous
California.
Technology.
Look at California
requirements.
I mean, this is, yeah.
This is the story.
That's the story.
So this is the story.
The story is California passed their own, you know, what's being tagged as GDPR light legislation, and now similar rules and restrictions are being applied in the state of California as Europe. I expect this to,
and will come into effect, yes, much broader in the next, yes, couple years. But yes,
I expect this to be something that happens in more states. Not all of them, like maybe not in Texas, but like in left leaning states, this is going to happen quickly.
Yeah, and potentially, you know, for you to do business in the state of California, let's think about what I just said about some retailers deciding not to do business in Europe. You know, we've now bifurcated the internet, right? So the internet used to be, no matter where you are, you can access anything on the World Wide Web, because that's how it works. Now, based on local laws, we've decided that we don't want to provide access to certain countries because it sounds hard and it's going to be expensive. So, you know, certain countries, you visit a website and you'll get a splash page that says, sorry, due to GDPR, we no longer allow you to look at our website.
Yeah.
That sucks. Can you imagine? It sounds crazy today, but 2 years from now, it may not be so crazy that, you know, some company decides that they don't want to do business in the state of California. So if you're in California, you're no longer allowed to look at our website. That is terrifying. Because that's not the spirit of the web, and that's not the spirit of global commerce and global freedom of information share that
was
supposed to be the internet.
That businesses are just going to have to comply. Like, I don't see people
in the same way. you don't see this being challenged in some way. Like this sounds like the sort of like, you know, era defining thing that, you know, that we have to decide as a generation, which way we want to go and at what point does California get to determine how the rest of the country and maybe the world gets
Europe
to do
kind
business.
Of already determined that.
Right. We can't control Europe, but we can certainly talk about from a federal perspective whether a law like that. We just saw this with the Vertex interview right. that we did at IRCE. I anticipate a law like this being challenged at the, you know, in the highest courts in the nation, and we'll have to make a decision. I think that's why the you know, who we put into political office and how they appoint judges is a very important thing for global commerce. And, you know, unintended consequences abound.
Yeah. It is interesting.
It's crazy.
It is interesting. I mean,
yeah. I'm playing both sides here. I mean, because privacy is super important, but I also think that, you know, the states can concoct laws that will, you know, further divide our nation's, you know, access to retailing.
Well, and that's
commerce.
The tricky part is like, this is the kind of thing where, yeah, like, if businesses have to comply with this, like, there's different laws per state. And like there's certain like different yeah. levels of privacy consent per state, you know, that's going to be a huge burden on businesses that are selling online. That would be almost everyone now.
I mean, we dumped a bunch of tea into a harbor 200 years ago, protesting taxes. And now we have, you know, one of the most complicated, you know, intrastate tax, you know, codes in the whole world. You know, I think that we'll find ways to manage the complexity with people that are experts in the privacy space and privacy compliance space. And there's likely to be some, you know, cost associated with doing business online and managing people's privacy. Maybe we see services that you can pay that'll manage a per state, you know, privacy complexity.
That's actually not a bad idea. That's actually, yeah, let's just, yeah.
Hey, Chris, cut that out. Let's just make that as a business.
That's actually legit. I don't know, man.
That's an eventuality. That's going to happen one way or another. And there will be, you know, lots of people that will try, you know, to manage that. I think it's going to take a lot of, we're some ways away from it, but
we're
it sounds
like far
it's
away from
something
it,
that's going to have to happen one way or
California's
another.
GDPR light law just passed. Like, this is not that far away. If you're a retailer, it's funny, like looking at the effect of GDPR in American business. I don't know how revenue impacting it's been so far. It'll be interesting to see once we start to see stats on that. If you felt like this was revenue impacting, which I tend to think that, you know, I don't think it was that revenue impacting. Like, it wasn't too heavy of a cost.
Really?
Simply because I don't think that many American businesses did all that much with it. Thus far. That's my gut.
Right.
On this. Like, a few months in, and I think a lot of retailers have been like, oh yeah, that thing passed. Like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to do with this. So it's my point isn't that it won't impact them, but that they haven't really done anything with it.
Yeah. but they haven't. I mean, what was it, day one or two? They, you know, went right yeah. after. They went for the jugular. The European Union went for the jugular on some large, you know, social media companies, and Google. But we're probably a few years out from them turning that fire hose toward yes. you know, small and medium sized businesses yes. who have sort of been lax on this. And in that point. At that point, we'll, you know, somebody's going to have to yes, step up, and we're totally. Going to have to find a way to manage the complexities, because, you know, mom and pop, you know, t-shirt shop or, you know, random fashion designer shouldn't need to manage the complexities of digital, you know,
security,
you
know, per state.
Digital privacy for them to sell a dress. Like, right. And that sounds, yeah. complicated, because it is complicated, but it's necessary. And I'm the first one to rally for it, but we shouldn't have to wear juggalo makeup for us to maintain
and
our privacy in
that.
The United States. And that's the final word.
Cool.
Woo! If you like listening to Future Commerce, we want you to go subscribe. Head on over to futurecommerce.fm. Smash that like and subscribe button. We're everywhere. We are listening to you. We're in your homes. No, I'm just kidding. We're everywhere that you listen to podcasts. You can catch us on any smart speaker device with the phrase play Future Commerce Podcast. We're also on Spotify and pretty much everywhere else. Oh, iHeartRadio. We're live on iHeartRadio this week. That's kind of fun. So lots of cool stuff happening in the Future Commerce space. Make sure you also sign up for our FC Insiders, which is your first ticket into what's happening in the show. And we've got a lot of stuff coming up here in the summer and the fall. And we're very excited to announce that we are kicking up a new sponsor. We have a new partnership that we've formed with PayPal to help bring you some interesting content in this space and talk a little bit more about how PayPal is helping companies of all sizes to be successful and to connect with their customers. So check that out in the next few weeks. That'll be fun. But until next time, Brian, what is it we say?
Retail tech is moving fast.
And future commerce is moving faster.
See you next time.
And also no longer employed by Amazon. Okay. See you next time. Bye.